we're here too. What an amazing place. I want to give you just, for those of you who weren't here Thursday night, who haven't heard the background on this project, I'll give you the elevator speech. This I've always worked as a freelance photographer. Back in 2009, I was frustrated with the quality of our national dialogue, which apparently hasn't gotten better. And I wondered if I could use my photography and storytelling to instead look at what connects us, look at what we share in common. So this exhibit and this matching book is the result of a 40,000-mile trip across the country asking people, what does peace mean to you? How do you work towards it in your life? And understand that Monday Musings is often run by the visiting pastor, and I'll promise you that I'm not a theologian. I've been called an itinerant, earthbound, pragmatic theologian. I don't know exactly what that means, but I kind of like it. But I'm primarily an artist. I can't quote a lot of scripture. I would be hard-pressed to recite all 10 commandments right now, although I think I have the gist of them in my mind. But I continue to go back to Jesus' call to love one another. And I've looked for the exceptions, and I've looked for the loopholes, and I don't think they exist. So it doesn't say love the ones that look like you. It doesn't say love the ones that live like you. It doesn't even say love the ones that voted like you in the last election cycle. It says love one another, period. And that's where this project begins. And in the world that seems to sort of drive head-on into conflict, that seems to cherish self-righteousness, I wanted to explore an idea that feels a little bit uncommon these days. And through this project, I think we address an idea that some people even view as weakness. And that word is yield. And the dictionary says that yield means to pause, to relinquish, surrender, or submit, or to slow down so that another might advance. And that definition sort of caught my ear. To slow down so another might advance. To give up a little bit of my own ambition so that another person might thrive. To consider needs other than just my own. And I think that's good. That's biblical, even though it just comes from Merriam-Webster. I think we have biblical lessons that are all around us if we take the time to listen. But since I wanted to tie this in a little bit to faith, I thought I should come up with a Bible passage, and like I said, I'm not a theologian, but I know some. So it's a life secret, right? You don't have to know all the answers. You just have to be friends with the people who do. So I put out a call and had some people suggest some passages, and I was fond of Luke 13, verses 6 through 9. And Jesus told this parable: a man had a fig tree growing in his vineyard, and he went to look for fruit on it, and he didn't find any. And so he said to the man who took care of the vineyard, "For 3 years now, I've been coming to look for fruit on the fig tree, and I haven't found any. Cut it down. Why should that tree use up my soil?" "And sir," the man replied, "leave it alone for one more year, and I'll dig around it, and I'll fertilize it. If it bears fruit next year, then fine, then cut it down." But he said, "Wait. Just pause. Yield." And let me ask you this, at what point is it okay for us to give up? When should we go to chop down that tree? How long is too long to wait for that tree to bear fruit? And how long should we be patient with one another? We don't really know what happened to the tree. I assume the servant tended to it, dug around the roots, and maybe the next year it bore fruit, which would be great. But maybe it didn't. And I would like to think that the servant would reapply for clemency if that was the case. You know, it was just a stall tactic. Well, come on, let's try one more year before chopping it down. And I've found stories like this all through my travels as I've met people, as I've talked to different people. People like Tyrone Wirtz, who served 36 years of a life sentence for second-degree murder. He said when he was sent to Graterford Prison when he was young, he was cocky, bitter, and angry. He was arrogant. He said, "When you go to prison, you're just a statistic. People just know you as a number. There's a process and they push you along." But there was one man, Mr. Bellow, who saw some promise in Tyrone, who saw some potential in Tyrone and started working with him. And Tyrone said that's when he was able to go from being an angry young man and turn into the man that his parents had raised him to be. He said, I want to leave a legacy. I want my daughter and my siblings to know that even though I'm in prison, I'm still a good person. And let me ask you again, at what point are we willing to give up on a person? What will it take to help them bear fruit? Deanna Thompson was getting ready to die. She had stage 4 breast cancer. It had metastasized to her bones. She was given 5 years to live. Nobody with that diagnosis lives longer, except I interviewed her 6 years past her diagnosis. And we had lunch a couple of months ago, and she was 10 years past her diagnosis. And I asked her how you go on living when you're dying, and she said, well, we're all doing that, but some of us are doing it a little more acutely than others. And she talked about needing to let go of control, of needing to accept the help of others. And she said, cancer is definitely not a gift, but in the worst of times, I've experienced the most beauty and the most peace and the most grace. And I have to hold those two things together. You know, life is not black and white. Life is not good and bad. It's this remarkable, complex and beautiful combination of all of those things. And I met Michael Reed out in San Francisco, who is addicted to heroin. He funded his addiction with petty crime, and he was busted and put on probation. But as he said, when you're a junkie, there's only one appointment you're going to keep, and it's not with the court. And so he missed his probation meetings. He wound up in jail. And it gave him a chance to clean up. He got out and he wound up volunteering at a food shelter, and sort of by accident, he wound up running the food shelter. So now he runs a food program for 450 families every week. And he says, well, I didn't even see it happening. Now I'm working for the benefit of others instead of being self-serving. It's a whole new concept. People stop me on the way out and they say, thank you, God bless you. And how can you not feel good about that? So all of these stories around us, so many of them, these people had not borne fruit at any given point in their life. The master of the vineyard could have cut them down, but for some reason paused, yielded, so that someone else could advance. And I think we all are hasty in our decisions. We discard those we disagree with. We disengage before we do the hard work of tending to the plant. We forget to dig around the roots. We forget to do the hard work of nurturing, which can lead to bearing the fruit. So hold up and yield for a minute. So in this whole project, in talking to people, the process has been about listening. You know, not judging, not correcting, not convincing, but simply sitting down and listening to try to hear people's perspectives. And when you do that, you hear some amazing things. When I was listening to the sermon about all of us being broken, about none of us measuring up, it reminded me of some words from Carl Kenney, who says, Christ found me and said, I love you still, knowing that I didn't deserve it. It comes from knowing that even in my walk of faith, I've made my share of mistakes. I've not been a perfect vessel, and I never will be, but I've been faithful. And I see that in everyone I meet. We share in our common frailty. So who am I to judge? That's what gives me the strength to keep moving on. We use these stories to talk about interfaith dialogue. I've tried to draw on different traditions for these stories: Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, atheist, agnostic. And I like the example of Eric Gibson, who's a Buddhist teacher and a financial planner, which I find to be an interesting combination. Actually, I'll tell you a funny little story from this, too. When I printed my first exhibit, I'll tell you, our son, when he was a teenager, he wanted to play drums. So we bought him a drum set. And 2 weeks later, he didn't want to play drums anymore. So we put him on Craigslist. And this was right about the time, the drums, not my son. sorry. And that was right about the time I had printed my first exhibit. And so these prints were all sitting along in the basement next to the drum set. And this couple comes to look at the drums. And he walks in and he's staring at this picture. And I said, what's up? And he goes, well, that's my financial planner. And then he said he would be really mad if he knew I was out buying drums. So that didn't work out so well for us. He didn't buy the drums, but here's what I love about interfaith dialogue, because Eric and I sat in conversation for an hour, and never once did I try to convince him he should be a Lutheran, and he didn't try to convert me to be a Buddhist. But every once in a while, he would share a story that I could recognize from my own tradition, and I would say, oh yeah, we talk about that too, in this slightly different way. And there's where you get your foothold. There's where you find your common ground and you can begin a relationship. And he shared this Buddhist saying, which is, when you look for your own happiness, you'll always have problems. But when you work for the happiness of others, then you'll always have interesting work to do. And I think that squares up so well with my Christian notion of service to others. You know, if you can take the focus off yourself and care for other people, somehow magically that circles back to fulfill you. I met Ode Muhawish, who grew up in Jordan and now lives in Minnesota. So he likes to say he was a Middle Easterner and he's now a Midwesterner. And he says, he likes to say to people, you know, what would we do if Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad were to come back and stand in front of their people today? And Moses would ask his people, what have you done? And Jesus would ask his people, what have you done? And Muhammad would ask his people, what have you done? And they would all be ashamed of us. You know, I think the human ability to mess up a good thing is pretty profound. And I think that we make the mistake of conflating the two. We